Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
What up, it's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats. At a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I'd rather stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there is no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Howdy, Steph.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. I accidentally unmuted Coach Oyama a little bit early, but it's all good, bro. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. Just trying to get through the corona.
Right. You know, it's a travesty in all of our lives. You know, I had you on not too long ago, and we kind of touched a little bit on it. To be honest with you, 150 days of riots and the coronavirus, people at each other's throats. You know, how does a man like Coach Oyama continue to pick up and inspire his fighters? Because if you look at it, in fact, you were one of the first coaches to come back to the sport when it came back. So how did you bring those fighters back up to level and give them the thought perception, the knowledge and the wisdom that they needed to overcome this?
I think it's something that you got to want to do, man. I mean, I know when this thing first came out, you know, you had all these people, all these celebrities saying stay home. And I'm not saying, you know, be an idiot and go out and socialize everywhere. But at some point, hey, life's going to keep happening with or without you, you know. So, what made me laugh is a lot of these millionaires in Hollywood saying stay home. Yeah, that's because they're still getting their asses paid, you know? Or you have all these government workers saying stay at home. Yeah, well, if I was getting a government paycheck to stay home, I'd stay home too, but I wasn't, so we all got together. And yeah, I'm serious, man. You have all these state employees in California all on TV saying stay at home. It's like, well, that's easy to say when you're still getting paid off my tax dime, you know? If you all weren't getting paid, you wouldn't be saying that too, you know? So we all got together,
really,
and a lot of the guys said, hey, man, we want to fight. You know, Carla and them said, we got to fight. So we're like, all right. So we put together a small crew of people to train. We made sure everybody, you know, did a good job of staying clean. And it allowed us to fight. And like you said earlier, we fought a lot, man, since Jacksonville till now. I mean, a lot of my guys are in their second and third fights this year just during the shutdown period. So for us, man, it was definitely the right decision to stay busy and not cower and hide in the corner.
Yeah. You know, one thing that amazes me about you, and I don't think very many people understand this. I mean, you came about coaching in this aspect in, I think, 1996, around there. But this has always been who Colin Oyama is. You went to Loyola. You had a law degree. What was it, or who was it, that instilled in you, Coach Oyama, that your true passion was in creating greatness in others?
I don't know. I think it's just a lot of circumstances that ended up that way. Sometimes I look at some of my lawyer friends and wonder, like, man, maybe I should have went there. That guy's got a pretty nice ride, you know? So, you know, there's days, trust me, there's days that go by where you kind of wonder, you know, was it the right choice or not? I mean, I can't tell you, like, yeah, this is wonderful, you know, all the time, when it's like, man, you know, you can't pay for this or you can't do that. If I was doing something else in the legal world, well, yeah, I would be doing it. So,
trust me.
And, you know, at some point, there's got to be a point of, you know, where there's got to be some return on what you're doing. I'm not going to just do the whole, like, hey, you know, for the love of fighting, we're just going to keep sticking our head in our asses. It's like, at some point, it's like, look, man, this thing's got to pay off, you know? So,
I know that feeling, Coach, because
I bet you know that feeling for sure, yeah.
Well, being a photographer in this sport, you know, it's a lot harder than being a coach. Trust me. You know,
oh, yeah.
You got to undercut people. You got to do whatever it takes to feed your family. And me and Dan Mergliotta, we talked about this on a show, and it's so true. Even today, to this, you know, in this day, we would take a show, pay for our own airfare to get out there, pay for our own hotel. Sometimes we'd have to pay for a ticket to get into the venue for an event we were hired to work, not knowing if we were going to get paid.
Man. Yeah.
And that's the old school of this sport. You know, I'm like you. I walked away from a six-figure job 24 years ago. My wife said, "You go live your dream." And I looked at her and I said, "Are you crazy?" I said, "Are you sure?" And she said, "Go live your dream." You know, MMA and Muay Thai are a passion for you, Coach Oyama. A lot of people really don't know the retrospect of the Muay Thai side. That's an aspect that's very near and dear to you. When you separate it from just MMA and break it down into Muay Thai, who were some of the greats that inspired you, sir?
For me, in Muay Thai, it was my own trainer. You know, he passed away earlier this year. People called him Crew Rex. His real name was Beach Eye, Super Kid Pole, but he was definitely the person that got me going in Muay Thai, and, you know, definitely got a love for it. And I still watch it now, even with all the MMA stuff going on. I still get on the tube and, you know, do my best to keep up. I'm not always up to date. I do watch a lot of 1FC Muay Thai guys, because I still enjoy that style of fighting. It's definitely a passion of mine. I definitely enjoy the beauty of the sport and the tradition that goes along with it. And the respectful side of Muay Thai, which is a lot different than other fighting sports, I think, it pays a lot of homage to people that have come before them. So I think a lot of the Muay Thai fighters are very respectful when they're in there, because they're not out to embarrass the sport or the people that came before them. Whereas I think a lot of other fight sports, they could care less, you know. But it was good. It was a good learning experience, and taught you not only how to fight, but how to act, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's weird. Muay Thai is who I am. Yeah, it's weird. I got started shooting in boxing. Ended up doing Pride, Glory, and then UFC. But Muay Thai is who I truly am. I had Crew Yawadi Hurst, one of the first female crews ever indoctrinated in Thailand, and her father was a monk, and he didn't like the fact that she was a fighter because he was a monk. You know, he believed women should stay home and do their duties, and she would fight for school shoes or books or food. And then on his deathbed, she was there, and he called her close. He said, "I want you to teach me one thing." And she said, "Yes, Father." She goes, "I want you to teach me Muay Thai." And on my show with her, she said that was probably the most beautiful moment in her life, because at that moment she realized, even though her father was against her fighting and what she did, he approved of her. You know, people don't really understand the tradition of true Muay Thai. I got to shoot Buck Ao. It was one of the craziest moments in my life. Will I ever forget it? No. But there's, like you said, the ritual aspect of Muay Thai. Truly, for me, it defines the fighter. It defines the fight. It shows homage and respect before you even battle each other. It's one of the truest forms. But we're here to talk about Team Oyama. You know, how does a coach handle somebody like Quentin Rampage Jackson back in the early days of Pride and Glory? And how do you correlate yourself to the new era? Because you're old school. How does a coach like you go from being in the aspects of when the sport was truly grit and grime to, you know, curtailing it and going along with the time as it comes in front of you, sir?
At first, it was kind of interesting. You know, I figured, let's become more like whatever, and you start to deal with certain issues that have come up with the younger generation. But I actually reached the point where, for lack of better English, I mean, that shit got old. I felt like I was a babysitter. You know, you're getting called at 2 a.m. because some dipshit got a DUI. And, you know, then I start to ask myself, man, like, man, is this what I walked away from law school for this nonsense, or I need something better, you know? And a couple years ago, I thought about, you know, hey, man, maybe I'm done. You know, I had some friends that I went to school with in college that had quit football coaching, and these guys were football coaches for a long time. We all played ball together in college. And I think that kind of surprised me when I asked them, like, man, you guys just, like, stop coaching? And they're like, yeah. And both guys, you know, one guy was at Nogales High School, one was at Esperanza High School, and they're strong schools, and they just told me the same thing, man. They didn't feel that they could communicate to the kids anymore, you know? And then I started thinking, well, shit, man, maybe that's me. But, you know, I sat down with my old trainer before he passed away, and he was just like, well, problem is, you're trying to, like, cater to these guys. He's just like, school, you know? Find a bunch of guys that fit your way of doing it, and you're better off doing it. And it sounded kind of simplistic at the time, you know, like, okay. But then I ran into a certain particular kid that was kind of like to do it my way. And I was like, well, shit, okay. Maybe that's not so bad. And the more I started to find people that fit my mold, I think things started to work out better, you know. And then I started to read about Bill Belichick and some of these other guys. And he's not the most popular guy in the world, but the guy won 6 Super Bowls, you know, by finding the right types of players for his system versus, you know, kissing everyone's ass and having a crap show of a team. And so I've learned that, hey, man, instead of me adjusting to, you know, what these kids want today, it's just like, hey, this is how I do it. If you don't like it, you don't got to come here. I could care less. But if you do come here, it's going to be done this way. And if you don't like it, you can pack your shit and get the hell out. And I've noticed for me, man, that's been a lot more productive than the other way around of, like, you know, what can I do for you today? What can I, you know, what can I get you? How can I bail you out of this problem? What else do you need? It's just like, no, you know what, man? You know, you're a grown-ass man, and I'm a grown-ass man. So, you know, for the fighters that I deal with now, if my dream's bigger than theirs, then it makes no sense to train them, because you're never going to get anywhere with them.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, but there's a side to you that it's true, and it's a rare aspect, and you hold each and every one of your fighters to this, and that's accountability.
Yeah, I don't care if you're in the UFC or you're in the no UFC. I mean, practice starts at this time, and, you know, if you have training camp, don't be crying to me about guys showing up when you don't show up for anybody else, you know. So a couple of our younger girls right now have fights coming up. They're not in the UFC. They're fighting for LFA coming up, and Invicta, and, you know, their sparring partner is Carla. As far as I call their ass up, like, hey, I need you these 2 days, 3 days a week. So she's like, all right. So and she comes, you know. She didn't cry about it. She was like, all right, yeah, I know what my job is. So whether you're a former UFC champ or you're an up-and-coming girl, I think it helps, you know, for these younger girls to, like, be able to rely on somebody like that to come in and help them train, you know. I know a lot of gyms, you know, scrub fighters don't even help each other out. You know, here they have somebody that was the former world champion come in and say, all right, yeah. And she was with both girls tonight working on their wrestling. And, you know, I think those type of moments help the younger kids realize that, hey, you know, it's a privilege to be here. You know, I don't owe you anything. And whether you go or you stay, it's not going to make or break my day. We'll find somebody else. So I think the ones that are appreciative where they're at, they'll go a long way. And the ones that have that entitled mentality, like, hey, you owe me something. Well, one, I'll tell them to their face, I don't owe you jack shit. I'm not. Don't ask me for anything. I'm not going to pay you anything. But if you work hard and you do what you're supposed to do and you live up to your responsibilities, we'll get you into the bigger show, or, you know, we'll die trying. But we'll definitely put everything we got behind you. And, I've been able to get some good kids, not just Alex Perez, but, you know, Christian Aguilera and, you know, Marlon Vera and Carla. I mean, these are hardworking kids. Louis Smolka, I mean, and they're approachable kids, you know. Like Louis, you see that guy walking down the street, he'll talk to anybody, you know. I mean, they don't act like they're special or something or whatever. I mean, you know, Louis is a friendly dude, you know. So,
I'm going to make a statement, bro, and I don't mean to cut you off, Coach. I'm going to make a statement because I've interviewed a lot of your fighters. And I'm going to piss some coaches off and some fight teams, but I only know one way, and that's real. When I interview your fighters, I get humility, I get character, and I get integrity and respect. A lot of these guys, I mean, they don't understand. I'm like you. I can give two shits. I don't get paid for the show. I do it for the fighters. I do it for the coaches, the inner workings. Excuse me. People don't understand. I threw Colby Covington off my show when he was a world champion. Why? Because Colby's no better of a man than me. He's no different of a man. He just has a different job. And I'm not going to sit on my show and be belittled, made fun of, or made to feel like I'm lesser than. But when it comes to your fighters, there's a difference. You know, Burt Watson and I were on the show. He was on my show, I think, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And we were talking about tremendous teams that are coming up in the sport in this new era with this crazy crap going on. And your name was brought up. You know, I know you're not one for recognition. I know you're not one to take much into what others say about you. But when a legendary icon, iconic of an aspect of a man, just blurts your name out right in the middle of his show, does it make Coach Oyama feel like you are making, you're truly making that difference?
In the end, man, the way I look at it, I guess I'm not as nostalgic as a lot of other people, man. It just comes down to W's. So, you know, for example, you got a world title fight coming up. If we win it, then yeah, I guess I'm doing the right thing. If we lose it, well, we did okay, but I should have did a better job, you know. I think I don't live in the past too much, but, you know, Burt Watson is a guy I respect. I remember Burt when he started with the UFC. He was a one-man band, you know. He picked us up on the airport. He checked us in, and then he got us to our rooms. I mean, that dude did everything by himself, you know. And then from there, he got a staff of guys. But I'll always remember Bert because at the UFC fights, he got everybody ready to fight. He'd start screaming about, you know, we rolling. And he brought a great energy to the fights. And that is something I miss. I'll say that about the guys they got now. Those guys like Dean and those guys, they're a bunch of hardworking dudes.
Yeah.
And you know, Bert was a good part of that too. He's kind of like a crossover between older and younger generation of guys too. So I understand what some of his frustrations too, you know, with some of the young people. I mean, he was a no-nonsense guy, and that's what I respected about him, man.
And you know, it's kind of funny. We're all kind of cut from the same cloth. We all came from corporate jobs to the sport.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't know that Bert Watson was the head of Levi Strauss and Company's textile division before he got into the fight business. It's kind of crazy. I mean, you sit back and there's no, you know, denying that we love this sport. But, you know, Coach, I've always wanted to ask you this question. Because, you know, a minute ago you said it's about the W. When a fighter gets taught a lesson, how hard, do you take it as hard as the fighter does? Or do you just chalk it up and understand it and move forward?
No, I think we take losses. I take losses pretty hard because I feel like, hey, man, look, you know, probably should have came up with a better plan or figured something else out. You know, I know a lot of people are, you know, when they do something great, it's them. You know, when they do something bad, it's you type of spiel. But, you know, for me, it's like, hey, you know, the buck stops with me because I'm the one that's calling the shot, so... You know, if we lose a big fight, then, you know, I'll eat it. Hey, man, I got to answer the questions and deal with the sponsors and everybody else. Like, yeah, man, we lost that one. What can I say? It doesn't bother me. You know, I'm 51 years old. You know, some guy wants to talk shit to me, I'll talk shit to him back. I could care less. Sometimes
the young kids
have a hard time dealing with it. And I'll just, you know, if people get pissed when you talk back to them, like, I'll be like, look here, boy, I could care less what your opinion is, you know. What a dollar.
you remind me so much of Chris Brennan. Chris Brennan don't take no shit off nobody either, you know. But this business, you have to keep it real. You can't sugarcoat anything. You gotta be cut and dry. You know, like I talked about earlier, you know, people hated me because if somebody was getting paid $2,800 from the promotion for a fight, I'd say give me $2,300, but give it to me in cash. My family ate, you know. Just recently, I retired from the sport after 24 years, and legends reached out to me and said that they thought it was the smartest move of my career. And I would rather go out on top than an afterthought. How does Coach Oyama look at where he's at now? Because I think you're just getting started, to be quite honest with you, Coach.
I think it depends on the younger generation of kids coming up. I mean, you know, if I find the Alex Perez's and the Lewis's and the Carlos of the world and Christian Aguilera's, yeah, I'm in it. If I get some of the crybabies I see on Instagram every day whining about some bullshit, then I'll definitely move over towards the personal training aspect of it and be like, hey, you know what, let's just focus on making money. So I think it just depends. You know, everything runs its course. I don't think mine's just run. I think a lot of people get out of coaching or something when they feel like they got nothing left. I got a lot left. It just comes down to do I want to share with what I got with what's out there, you know. With a guy like Alex and Christian and those hardworking kids, it became something to where it's like, yeah, man, you know what? It was great working with those kids because they're always working to get better. Also ran into my share of other shitheads that, you know, wasted a whole bunch of time I'm not going to name any names, but yeah, you know, they kill a lot of time and they kill a lot of your energy too, because kind of like, you know, why are we sitting here going through this day after day when nothing happens, you know? So I put that on myself, you know. I got to do a better job of weeding through some of these people, and I think I have actually, you know. Some people get pissed off now, like, oh, you didn't even give me a chance. It's like, nah, I didn't even want to go there because I already see what a jerk off you are and how lazy you are, and it's like, nah, you're not for me, man. You know, I don't care how talented you are. Go be talented. If you were as talented as you thought you were, you would have already made it without me. So, you know, so I'm learning, you know. I've been guilty of that in the past, of dealing with people and everybody told you, don't do it. And you think you're the guy that can turn them around, so you give it a shot. And of course, he doesn't change or they don't change. And then you're like, before you know it, you're like, man, what the hell? So I think how, as long as I stay in the sport, I personally need to do a better job of, like, you know, weeding out the ones that, you know, deep down, you know, can make it. You know, when I met a kid like Alex and Christian, like, I knew they're going to make it. You know, are they going to fight for a world title? I don't know. But I at least knew that, hey, with their work ethic, they would make it in something. So they're worth rolling the dice for, you know. But I've run into some other talented kids, and everything's just talk, 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 talk. And it's just like, man, you know, spend half your energy talking and maybe more energy running, and your ass wouldn't run out of gas so fast, you know?
Exactly. You know, Coach, I see it every day, and I just sit back and laugh. I know Habib very well. I shot him at AKA. I've shot his fights. To me, he was one of the greatest fighters in the UFC. To me, what he did the other night was tremendous. And to retire in respect of his father, I think, was heart-wrenching. But you see the ugly side of the sport. They instantly attack him and say he wasn't the GOAT. They instantly attack him and say he wasn't the best pound for pound. Now, you're a biased party here. I'm kind of putting you in the hot spot. But when you look at a fighter like Habib, what are your thoughts? Because in my thought, I think he's one of the greatest fighters that was ever in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people hate on winners, right? Nobody hates on a loser. So,
yeah.
Obviously, the people that are hating on the guy are upset that he's such a winner. And, well, hell, he's beyond just a winner, right? He's like the ultimate winner. He's never lost. And I know people are always like, whoa, this or that or whatever. Hey, look, I get it. John Jones is a great fighter. He's beaten a lot of good guys. So is he up there for one of the best ever? Sure. George St. Pierre, you know, won a lot of good fights, and he beat a lot of good guys. Is he up there? Sure, he is too. In the case of Khabib, you know, does he have as many wins in the UFC as they do? No, he doesn't. Is he also retiring prematurely? Yes, he is. But is there really anyone else in the 55 division that could beat him at this point in time? I don't think so. I mean, he's rolled through just about everybody. I think maybe, you know, Charles Oliveira is a pretty impressive guy. And so, you know, maybe he can put up a fight off his back. And I've enjoyed watching Charles fight. And so I really think at 55, that guy's going to be a force. But, you know, all of the names that keep coming up, whether it's McGregor or some of these other guys, you know, and Poirier's got a chance. I mean, they fought once before. Poirier hit him with a bomb and hurt him. So, you know, there's always a possibility that you know, these guys could do it. But if he fights these guys the way he fought Saturday night, it's going to be hard for a 55er to beat him. You know, and Justin Gaethje, he's not a piece of garbage, man. That guy's a quality fighter, you know.
Yeah.
A very, very, very good fighter. You know, he took Tony Ferguson apart. I've seen him take other people apart. It wasn't like he was some, you know, has-been or some washed-up fighter. I mean, he is a top-notch fighter.
You know, the sad part submitted. About Justin Gaethje, though, is, bro, is they called him a washed-up fighter twice when I shot him in WSOF. You know, they said that he wouldn't make it to the UFC. He would never go anywhere. And then, now he's in the UFC and he's fighting some of the best talent in the world. I just think he had an off night. I mean, because I will say, you know, I'm a fan of Gaethje's. I don't think he had what it took that night. I think he didn't have the heart. You know, you got a special. You've named a few fighters, but you got one that's getting ready to fight in particular that I'm very fond of, and that being Alex Perez. For some reason, quite a while ago, I had my eye on him. I reached out to you, and you got me an interview with him. Now, I know what I see in Alex Perez. What does Coach Oyama see in him?
I see a kid that has a different upbringing than a lot of the kids in Orange County and in California. And just, you know, when you're one of nine kids and, you know, you got a hardworking mom, single mom and stepdad, and you come from farming country, I think it gives you a different perspective and a different outlook on what you're entitled to have and what you're not. And I noticed that a lot when I've dealt with guys from the country kids that they definitely have a different kind of drive. It's like when I have some Hispanics on the team from Mexico and they have a different kind of drive. It's just, when you weren't handed everything in your damn life, I think you definitely have a different appreciation. So, you know, I think the Brazilians, I think they do so well sometimes because, you know, people talk about that third world mentality. And a lot of these Brazilians that are coming up, you know, they're poor, man, and they have that third world mentality. They're tough, man. And I'll say that about Brazilians. Those guys are some tough guys. And I think the biggest advantage that Alex has over a lot of Americans, he comes from that mentality. Comes from a hardworking family, knows what it's like to work in the fields. Knows what it's like to have to, like, you know, wonder what's going to happen next. And I think when you come with that kind of mentality, you have a different determination. You have a certain relentlessness that most people don't have when, you know, if fighting doesn't work, well, mom will take care of it, dad will take care of it, somebody else will take care of it. Versus, you know, a person that's like, hey, this is my thing and I got to make this happen or else, you know, it ain't going to work out. So what I like about that kid is just he has a determination. And I think that determination is what's going to make it happen for him in that title fight.
You know, that statement kind of reminds me of a show you and I did a few months back. And we talked about how people say others are privileged. You know, to me, privilege is the opportunity to make something better of yourself. I was born in the projects. I lived in the hood for a little bit. And I got an opportunity to go to military school. And I came back and I screwed my life all up again. But I ended up persevering and becoming tremendous at what I do in life. What does privilege mean to Coach Oyama? Because life hasn't always been easy for you.
It hasn't always been easy, but, you know, I've been blessed with some great parents and family members, but especially my mom and dad. I mean, you know, they could have chose to drive nicer cars and done other things and, you know, looked out for themselves. But, you know, raising me up and, you know, my brother is handicapped. They put a lot into us kids, you know, instead of, like, driving the Mercedes and the fancy stuff and all that. You know, man, my mom was a school teacher. She wore normal things and she drove a damn Honda, you know. So I had parents that gave up a lot of stuff. So guys like, you know, someone like me could go to school, get an education. Pulled me out of a public high school, sent me into a private school because they thought, like, hey, you know, you're going to get in trouble here. You need to go somewhere else. And, you know, that stuff wasn't free. You know, so, you know, they sacrificed a lot so I could get somewhere. So, yeah, you know, wasn't born with $1 million, but I was definitely blessed with great parents. I've run into a lot of rich kids now that, yeah, their family's got money, but they're shitheads because their parents are shitheads, you know? So I thank God that the one thing I did have were supportive parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and a great family that supported me along the way. So I wouldn't change that for any amount of money. You know, that upbringing that I got, you know, people are like, whoa, this, that, and the other, but whatever. I'll pass on that. I'm glad I got what I got, you know, versus some of the things I see. But, you know, it's that work ethic, man. You know, my dad always preached about it. Sometimes when you're a kid, you don't always understand. Like, you're like, oh, here we go. Here goes dad, you know. But as you get older, you start to understand what old dad was talking about. Yeah, taxes suck. Yeah, this sucks. Yeah, you got to work. Yeah, this shit ain't free. You know, and then you start to realize, like, man, rent, yeah, you're right. Mortgage ain't free. Rent's not free, you know. So, it seems like the older I got, the smarter my parents seem to be, you know?
Right? I truly understand that because it wasn't my parents, but it was a man that came into my life, and he became my mentor, my grandfather. And it's kind of ironic, I ended up marrying his granddaughter, and I've been married to her for 35 years now. But I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 56, and... You know, I was on a show with a fighter one time, and he was talking about when he became a man. And, Coach, you know me. I pulled an Ian on him. You know, I told him, I said, bro, I'm not even a man. Just because you got, you know, a little bit of hair on your chest and you can have a beard, that doesn't make you a man. You know, I said, I'm 56 years old, and I'm just learning what it is to be a man. You know, I don't think we fully understand what it is to be a man until the day they actually bury us. You know, life is a philosophical jungle, and it's really, really crazy. You see my post, you see I'm quite quirky and eccentric, and I'm not short on words when it comes time for that. You know, if you had to write or paraphrase a statement about how you feel about life, what you've created, and what the future holds, what would that statement say?
That's a tough question, I guess. I mean, I think, you know, look, some people like, especially in this day and age, man, they'll talk about, you know, what's right, what's wrong, and everybody's got, you know, an opinion on stuff. And yet, you know, car's on fire, you got somebody in there. Are you going to tell everybody what to do? Or are you going to take your ass over to that burning car and pull that guy out, right?
Yeah.
So, for me, it's like, you know, instead of talking so much, I'm going to pull his ass out. It may not be the smartest move at the time, and shit, I might get burned, but, you know, I'm not going to sit there and watch somebody die in front of me. So I guess my mentality is like, you know, instead of talking about stuff, like, man, make something happen or shut the hell up. So I guess that could be it, you know, like, you got everybody, you know, and all their opinions on stuff, especially on Facebook, man, everybody's like, all their opinions, but not a damn person on Facebook actually does anything, right? So it's like, look, you know,
yeah,
you know, make a difference, man. You know, go out there and actually make a difference. Don't tell everybody all the stuff you're going to do. Just shut the hell up and do it, and people will figure it out. So I guess that's my thing, you know, like, don't be a Facebook superhero, because those guys don't do jack shit. You know,
I think that's what I love about you, Coach.
Well, yeah, at some point, you know, I always watch these videos and it makes me laugh, right? You got some guy getting the shit kicked out of him, or somebody's getting just, you know, screwed up in an accident, and you got all these video cameras and all these phones filming it, but not a single freaking guy does a damn thing to do anything. It's like, okay, you guys are all great camera guys, you know? But did it ever cross one of your feeble-minded idiot minds that, hey, man, that guy's dying right there, you know? Maybe you should, like, go help him. That lady's trapped in a car and the car's on fire. Maybe you should take your dumb ass off your phone, try and break the window and pull her ass out. You know, and I think we live in a society of like, yo, look at this video and everybody should have did something. But well, does everybody include you, asshole, or not? You know?
Right. Like the other day, for a prime example, that cop got beat up and nobody helped him, but everybody filmed it. You know, that's...
Yeah, they all filmed it, you know, and then as soon as their house gets broken into, the first thing they're going to do is call the police department that they want to defund. So it's kind of like, well, I thought you had this handled, bro. You know, call that social worker that's supposed to come over and help you, and they'll take care of it for you.
Right? My wife just got raped. We'll send somebody over next Tuesday. You know, don't even get me started on the political side, because I'm actually a regulatory judge for this election, and I'm like you. I'm not going to, if I'm going to bitch about it, I'm going to be about it, you know. And so I felt I had to take a place in this election. And with my show, I've got to meet some very intriguing and interesting people. So on behalf of the White House, I became a regulatory judge for the 7th Congressional District in Missouri.
All right.
For voter registration and voter fraud. You know, because I felt if I'm going to complain about politics, then I got to be about it. And that goes back to what you were saying. And this statement took me back almost 16 years, Coach. I remember when I lost my leg, and I was sitting in bed, and I thought my career was over. And time went by, and I finally talked a doctor into getting me a prosthetic. They said, oh, it ain't going to do you no good. You have no feeling in your other foot. You're missing half of it anyway. You'll never be able to walk again. But we'll do it for you. Well, I proved them wrong. And the sports said I would never be able to come back. And I proved them wrong. You know, here I'm an old man trying to compete with 20-year-old kids, climbing up the side of the cage or leaning over the apron, but I did it. You know, one thing I never realized in a million years until I was on a television show about a month and a half ago. They asked me if you could ever go back in time and get your leg back, would you? And I said no, because losing my leg allowed me to become the man I am today. It gave me greater passion. It gave me greater hope. And it taught me to persevere. And some of my greatest work came after my greatest loss. Coach, how do you instill in your fighters to overcome their greatest losses and realize that they can change, they can create a future that they won't even look back at this loss? How do you get in their heads in that aspect, sir?
I think for the majority of them, I think they got to realize that, you know, fighting is physical and it's tough, but it ain't life or death. I think, and, you know, a lot of people have that mentality too. Yeah, I'm going to fight to the death. No, you're not. You know, for that guy that's in Afghanistan getting shot at, that dude's fighting to the death. Your ass is fighting for a paycheck. And don't confuse the two. So,
right.
You know. So I think a lot of these guys need to realize, and at least my guys realize, I tell them, hey, look, you know, if you ever want to quit fighting, you can always go get a 9-to-5 job and see how that works out for you. And a lot of them start thinking about, well, what does that mean? Well, one, you got to show up on time, buddy. And then you got to clock in. And then you got to answer to a boss. you know, and all of a sudden people start, you know, mulling over those options and start realizing that, well, you know, maybe losing that fight wasn't the end of the world. Eh, guess not, you know. So I just try and keep it in perspective, man. So, there's a lot of people out there putting their asses out on the line so these guys can fight. Like I said, I know a lot of people have these, you know, they talk about fighting like it's like, man, it's, we're on the battlefield. No, that dude in Afghanistan, that dude's in the battlefield. You're in a cage, or you're in a ring, or you're on the mats. Is it physical? Yes, it is. Is somebody trying to blow you the hell up? No, they're not. So, you know, things can get a lot worse for you. So,
oh yeah.
Do your best in fighting. If it doesn't work out for you, get a job. You know, there's always nine to five jobs everywhere. I know people keep saying that there's no jobs. Absolutely not true. I see high help wanted signs every time I go out to a restaurant. I see help wanted signs. So there's obviously a lot of jobs out there now. And so for a lot of these guys, I just try and keep it in perspective by saying, hey, look, man, if you no longer want to fight for the UFC, that is fine. You can always let Dana know, and you can go get a 9-to-5 job and see how that works. And usually that cures all the depression really quick.
Real quick, I bet. You know, that's one of the reasons why I love you, Coach Oyama, is you're cut and dry, you know, and you tell it like it is. You don't sugarcoat it. And I think that's why your team is fastly becoming one of the most intriguing teams in the sport today. You know, I can't wait to see Alex fight this weekend. And I think you said, isn't Lewis fighting first?
Yeah, Lewis on the, 14th or so, I think, November, and Alex the 21st, I believe.
Yeah, see, I still got time to get them guys on. You know, Coach, it's an honor for me to have you on my show and just be able to share the sport, what we love, our thoughts. You know, you've blessed my show many, many times. So I'm going to actually hand the mic to you for a second, because Team Oyama and Fitness is doing tremendous, and it's not for the faint of heart, it's not for anybody. But if there's a fighter on here listening, or somebody on here listening that is looking to gain the knowledge that you know, perceive on people, how can they get a hold of you? How can they get in touch with you, Coach?
Generally, just hit us up on social media. You can look up teamoyama.com, and that takes you right to our gym. And we have people that'll answer the emails and stuff. And, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, those aspects. And then we go from there. I know we've been hit up a lot by a lot of different athletes. And as soon as you start making demands, though, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm probably going to turn you off. So if, you know, you're just a hardworking guy, you want a chance, I'm your guy. If you want this, that, and the other from me, I ain't your guy. I ain't your mom. I ain't your dad. I'm not the welfare department. I ain't doing none of that. So you come out to Orange County, you have a place to live, you have a way to pay your bills, hey, I'm down. If you expect me to house you, bathe you, clothe you, babysit you, definitely not me. But you can hit up teamoyama.com and we have some people on the other end that can answer all the questions and definitely set you up with something. And we've gotten a lot of people that way. So.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I'm so proud of you and your team. You guys are killing it, you know. And like I said, you're probably one of the most productive teams since fighting has come back. And it's just a sheer testament to what knowledge and ability you bring to the sport. I commend you, and I'm always honored to have you on my show. I'm going to toss the mic to you. If you have any social media sites or sponsors or just anything else you'd like to add before I let you go, Coach, the floor is yours.
I just want to say, man, I hope everybody's getting through this shutdown period okay, and just, some people were in favor of what we did, some people weren't, but honestly, I give two shits. So sometimes, you know, you got to persevere and push through things. And for us, you know, we fought through the corona, and I hope everyone else will too. I mean, The country can't stay shut down forever. You know, you got a lot of people with a lot of goals out there. And, you know, be smart about what you're doing. You know, don't jump into a mass of people without whatever and get sick. But at the same time, man, hey, keep working towards what your goals are. You know, don't stay sheltered indoors like an idiot. You know, go out there and make things happen. I mean, we fought in Jacksonville. We've been fighting ever since. And none of our people have died from this virus or anything else. In fact, we've been, some of us are on fight number 3 already. So if you're an aspiring fighter out there, man, don't let this shutdown kill your dreams. Keep pushing through. Keep training. Keep working. Wash your damn hands while you're at it. But, you know, but don't give up on yourself, man. You know, don't let the media and the government and all these other celebrity ass clowns tell you can't do something and be scared and hide at home. You know, go out there. Nobody's going to look out for you except yourself. So, you know, believe in yourself and keep chasing that dream. And I wish everyone the best of luck out there, man.
Amen, sir. Coach, thank you so much for honoring my show. I can't wait till I have you back on again in probably about a month or so, because you guys just keep tearing up the fight scene, brother. And I love having you on because I gain so much knowledge from you, and I appreciate that you bring such a love and charismatic aspect to the sport. You're as true as they come, and I feel blessed and honored for the opportunity to have you on my show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on as well, and you know, wish you all the best, and we'll be crossing paths real soon. We'll go up to the 21st for sure.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you, Coach. You have a good night, brother. And
all right, you take care, Don. Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Colin Oyama. Cut and dry, as real as they come. I love that dude. It's an honor for me to have him on the show. He's a legend. And, man, I just love the dude. But anyway, thank you to my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouthguards with Alfred Freddy. Oh, I'm sorry, 86ers with Alfred and Freddy, and Bite Me Mouthguards with Joe Rice. It's been a long night. It's been a long week. Have a good night. God bless.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Oh, yo, that's what I'm talking about. My young boy up in the booth. He getting ready to kick it live.
Whip for him, I get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Broke this at 111, recorded. Clock struck 12, bank on Warner. Might sound with Stoney, just for the stock, nigga. Still independent, been in the lot, nigga. Cream on the seats, cream of the crop, nigga. Had to wait.